Okay, today's daf is daf pei. We're going to start at the bottom. We'll just review the Mishnah that we started with yesterday. We'll start from there and we'll go. If you have the sheets from yesterday, there's a chart that goes with it. Okay, Mishiyatza huvi ishto l'medina hayam. Uba huvi ishto banav, amar. So now we're going to have four scenarios. A guy, or it's two to break down into four. A person comes, he leaves the town with a wife. He goes abroad, he comes back with sons. And his wife, V'amar ishash yatzati milu medinat hayam harehi zo. This is the wife I left with. Ve'elu banehem. These are her children. Ein tzarich lavi raya lo ala isha v'lo ala banim. He doesn't need any sort of proof because obviously he was married to the woman before, and he doesn't need to, and therefore show that she's miyuchesed. That's the question here. Did he marry a mamzeret? Did he marry the wrong type of woman? But he also doesn't need to show that the children, because the assumption is that they came with children. These are obviously her children. Meta ve'elu baneha. Oh, sorry, I skipped one. No, that's it. Metu ve'elu baneha. If she died, and he comes back and says, forget that. We don't know that she died. He comes back alone with children, and he says, the wife I left with died, and these are her children. So mevi raya la banim ve'eno mevi raya la isha. He doesn't have to prove anything about the woman because we can assume it was the woman from before. But we don't know, and as we know the woman was okay, but we have to prove that the children are children through this woman. Isha nasati b'medinat hayam harehi zo. Let's say he comes back. Let's say he left. Now there were we ended this year with a bit of a debate because some of the commentary it actually breaks down. Some think that there were two wives here, but the main interpretation seems to be that it was just one wife, and he comes back. And he says, I married a woman, and he left single. And there's two options. Either he left married to one woman and now comes back with a different woman, or maybe he claims he married two women there, or seemingly, from most of the commentaries, it seems that he actually went single. He comes back and he says, I married a woman b'medina hayam when I was abroad, and here she is, harehi zo, ve'elu baneha, mevi raya leisha, ve'en tzarich levi raya labanim. Okay, so then he has to prove the woman's lineage, but then he doesn't have to prove the sons. We can assume the sons go along with her. Meta ve'elu baneha, she died. He comes left single, comes back single with children. Oh yeah, I married someone and she died, and here are her children. So now, since she's not there with the children, kind of saying, "Oh yeah, that's my mom," so we'd have to bring proof number one about the woman, because obviously we don't even know who she was, and number two that the children belong to that woman. Amar Rabba Barafuna, v'kulam bikruchim achareha. And all these cases, so comes Rabba Barachan and he narrows the focus of this and says, all these cases are children who are basically tagging along with their mother, okay? Meaning younger children who are saying, mommy, 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 okay? And then that proves to us, like we said yesterday, that there's this presumption of young children are very honest, and if they call her mom, she must be their mom. But now we're going to see that, right, there's a little bit of a... Now we're going to get to the two wives situation. Tana Rabbanan. Here's another braita that talks like this, but a little bit different, about the same case. Isha nasati b'medina hayam. If he goes and says, I married someone in Medina hayam, mevi raya la isha, ve'en tzarich lavi raya la banim. Okay, so again, this is presumably the case where he comes back with a wife and children. So he has to prove the woman, but not the children. Umevi raya al hagdolim. But if they're older children, then he has to bring proof about them because maybe he just taught them to lie, or right? In other words, they don't have that kruchim achareha. Ve'ein tzarich lavi raya al haktanim, but not about the ktanim. But now they're going to give another caveat. B'me dvarim amurim b'isha achat. This is only true, though, if he comes back, and what's true? That the younger children are believed to call her mom, and we assume she's the mother, only if there was one wife. Aval b'shtei nashim mevi raya la'isha ve'al habanim al hagdolim ve'al haktanim. Until now, what do we say? We only have to bring proof about the gdolim. The ktanim, we can assume if they call her mommy, she's their mom. But in this case, what do we say? Since there were two wives and one is no longer here, the other mother could have become their mother, so to speak. And they could still call her mom even though she's not their biological mother. Amar Ish Lakish. So now we're going to...
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think I got a little bit confused.
Okay.
And the question is, what is the status of the older boys because their mother might have been a Chalala Mamzeret?
Maybe they didn't come from this mother. And then we have no idea who the mother is. Yes, and maybe she came from a mamzer. If that's it's Kohanim, we have to be worried about halalut issues. Right. Could be a gir mitzri. It could be, right? We don't know anything about it. So we don't have a presumptive status of kashrut. Okay? If someone... It's almost like that, you know, nowadays when you have to prove your Jewishness. Let's say here, you come from abroad. You have to prove you're Jewish. So you get the rabbi to write you a letter. I know the family, blah, blah, blah. But if the woman came from somewhere else, you know, nobody knew when they got married, right? They don't have a, right. And nowadays, what do? You bring a ketubah and you show. But if we don't know, right, they didn't have any way to prove that they had a valid marriage and that someone had checked into it at some point. So there's no presumptive status of kashrut. So when they're abroad and we don't know from where, we don't know anything about it, so then all the questions are raised. When it happens here, so we can see, we saw the process and they got married, obviously someone must have looked into it. That's the assumption. Okay? It's exactly what goes on nowadays with the Russians. In other words, what happened there. You know, many cases, they have no documentation of their marriage because it was forbidden for them to get married. In other words, there's so many cases where they specifically weren't allowed to get married and therefore don't have documentation, and then without documentation, go prove. You know, and then there's a lot of questions raised about how do we know that they were really Jewish or not? And
except that, yeah, if lineage was so important then we would assume that they also checked earlier and they went to wherever they were.
Yes.
But well, the business they're raising questions like this means that obviously they couldn't track.
Right. They couldn't track it. This is really the whole question of tracking. And then we're going to get into now issues of chazaka. In other words, if someone's living with someone and there's children and we can assume the children belong to them, we're going to see something very, I think, very extreme about what presumptions we can make and where we can go with presumptions. Okay?
Is there any way, yeah, to check the children without actually checking the mother? I mean, sort of a...
What do you mean, checking
the children?
When
they're here, how do you check the children if you're not...
Do you find out? Right. It's a good question.
Not how you find out. Yeah. Is there any way... I mean, is there any point in saying you have to check the children but you don't have to check the mother? Which I think was one of them.
Because there isn't the mother.
Then you go check the children. What are you checking if it's not who the mother is?
You have to check... You have to try to find proof that these children came from that mother. That's the issue. It's like that case I brought up that they thought that maybe they were adopted because people were adopted in that town. So the question is, if the guy shows up without the wife, how do we know that these
know
kids
the,
belong to
the mother's
wife?
Status to know to something about the children also in terms of
if we can assume the children are hers, like if they call her mommy, then we can assume the children are hers and then we just have to prove her. But if we don't know if the children are hers because we don't have the woman here, we just have a man who says, I married so-and-so, or let's say the case where he left with so-and-so, and we knew that the marriage was good. We just have no clue where these children come from. Who's the mom? We have no idea. So we have to try to look and find out who was the mother. So in other words, there we don't know who the mother is. That's the whole issue. So we have to prove about the children who is their mother. That's what has to be proven. Okay, so we have to figure out how we find who the mother is. And then, once we prove who the mother is, so then, if it's the mother who we knew from before, then there's no reason to prove anything. The lineage is proven. But if it's some other woman that we don't know yet, then we have to check into her lineage. That would be the case.
It says, for the Isha, lo tzarich.
Yeah.
And the children tzarich. But really, if the children are tzarich, once you figure out who the mother is, you still have...
But it might not be the same woman that we're talking about. That's what we're saying. This woman is presumed to be fine because we know about her marriage to this guy.
Right.
But the children, we don't know that they come from her necessarily. Okay? That's the big question. So now, Amar Rish Lakish, another tzimtzum here, we're narrowing the focus. Lo shanu ela b'kodshei hagvul. This is all referring to, okay, now there's two different opinions about what exactly this means. What it means, just truma alone, that's Rashi. Okay, we're talking about, can the children eat truma? That's the issue. Okay, we're talking about, let's say, a Kohen situation. We want to know, can they eat truma? Okay? Aval b'yuchsin lo. But when it comes to the issue of yuchsin, okay, we're not going to rely on this chazaka issue. Okay? Meaning that, like, look at Rashi, he says, im yesh bahem banot, Einan nisot lekohanim ad sheviu raya shehem benoteha shalzo. In other words, if they're kruchim achareha, right, and the children say, that's my mom, that's not enough to allow someone to marry a kohen. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's not sufficient. So that's Rish Lakish's opinion. Tosfot has a different explanation of Rashi. He thinks that when we're talking about Yuchsin, we're talking about something different. He says, Kodshei Agvul includes, okay, this is Rabbeinu Tam. If you look toward the middle of Tosfot, the first Dibur HaMatchil, it says, Rabbeinu Tam Peresh. Okay, he's talking about, okay, fine, let's skip a little bit. He says, okay, a few lines down, at the end of the line, it says, Ela b'kodshei Agvul Perush, b'chol d'var k'dusha kigon l'truma u'nesia kapayim u'lahasiyo isha. Even Lahasiyo Isha, he doesn't call Yuchsin, okay? Mm-hmm. That's, all those issues are called Kodshei Agvul, which this would refer to. Aval Yuchsin lo, meaning, Klomar liskol al yado, deka amar zeha ben v'ze imo. When it comes to the case of where we want to say, this, what is Yuchsin? Yuchsin, we generally say, right, your lineage, but here we're talking about your relationships. He claims it means your relationships, meaning, are you married to this person, or are you married, and is this your mother, or is this not your mother? So let's say you sleep together. Is it arayot, is it not arayot? That's what we're talking about when he says, lili yuchsin lo. Okay? V'Rabbi Yochanan amar, and that's going to make a lot of sense with the continuation of the Gemara, this interpretation. Because then Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rish Lakish and says, afilu b'yuchsin. Even b'yuchsin, we can believe this. It's enough to say, kruchin achareha. Rabbi Yochanan goes l'shitato, and here comes the real interesting opinion here. And it's lahalacha, so it's really interesting to think about. Malkin al hachazakot, so clean v'sorfin al hachazakot ve'ein sorfim truma al hachazakot. Okay, now we're going to go into all these cases, but before we even get into them, I'll basically explain what it means, but we'll see better when we see the cases. If there's a chazakah that someone belongs to, some, you know, someone, whatever, there's a chazakah, we assume a presumptive status, that's enough to be mechayev some malkot. It's enough, skila or sreifa, right? Generally, what do we say? In order to kill somebody, you need full proof. Chazakah, presumptive status of someone is strong enough to allow the beitin to actually kill somebody. It's really strong. Okay, halacha here, and we're going to get into some examples. But he does say, even though we'll be metame the truma, if you remember what happens with truma, when you're metame truma, you have to burn it. So when it comes to chazaka, presumptive status of truma, we're not going to burn the truma based on it, okay? Although we're going to see that in certain cases, even Rabbi Yochanan says that we do burn truma based on chazaka. Okay. Malkin ala chazakot ki Rav Yehuda. Here we see Malkin ala chazakot. How do we know this? Like Rav Yehuda says. To Amar Rav Yehuda, huchzika nida b'shchenoteha. If a woman is presumed by her neighbors to be in nida status, now how did that work? Generally, she wore different clothing when she was in nida status. Why did they do that? Because other than, you know, the opposite of nowadays where people generally don't know when other people are in nida. But in those days, they had to know because of tum and tara. So if her friends said that she was in Nida at the time, and she slept with her husband, okay, there's Edim, there was, you have to have warning, obviously, also. She was warned, you know, the husband and the wife were warned that if you sleep together when she's in Nida. Now, some people say, isn't that Hatra'at Safek? Because they don't really know that she was in Nida, and you can't have...
Or they don't really know if they were having sex. Something.
Well, no, you can warn someone before they do it. Then after, right, then the question is, how do they know they actually had sex? How do they prove that? But right, that, we saw that whole thing about yichud, can we assume if they were mityachet, but with a husband and wife, I don't know that you can assume that. They're always mityachet, so that's not a good example, but I guess they saw them actually having sex. So, now we're talking, you know, he gets malka. We're not talking about killing. This is a case of, right, so what would you be getting malka for? No, he gets Malko for sleeping with her. Oh, right, because it's Karet. It's Yisro Karet. And on Karet, right, since it's Bidei Shamayim, you get Malko on something that you're Chayav Karet on. Okay, so now, Huchzikani da b'shchenotea ba'ala lokea la mishum nida. Okay, we can give him Malkot just because the neighbor said that she was in Nida. That's enough of a chazaka to say that we can get malko. So klim v'strafin ala chazakot. Kedarabba baruf huna, da'amarabba baruf huna, ish v'isha. Oh, so just going back, sorry, I left that in the middle. Hatra'at safek is generally not considered a hatra'ah, because if you're not really sure that you're giving like a... and it's, you're sure that it's usher for a man to sleep with a wife when he's in nida, but you're not sure that this man is about to sleep with a woman who's in nida. It's only based on chazaka, but the assumption is it's not a hatra'at safek if she's huchzika nida. It's a hatra'at badan. Okay, that's the interesting part about this chazaka. It turns it into a badan. So now, so klim v'strafin ala chazakot, k'derabba Rav Huna, d'amarabba Rav Huna, ish v'isha tinok v'tinoket, shigdilu b'toch habayit. You have a man and a woman with a baby and a, you know, a male and female children that they brought up within their house, but we don't know for sure. Let's say we didn't see her pregnant. Okay, maybe they moved in after. Okay, they moved in after she had the children and they grew up together in a house. There's a presumptive status that they're the parents. Niskalin ze al ze v'nisrafin ze al ze. Okay, if the mother sleeps with the son when the son gets older, so they get skila. A father and a daughter, the penalty is srefa. So in this case, they would get skila and srefa just because the presumptive status is that they're mother and father. Okay, this obviously isn't a case where the parents said mirosh, you know, we adopted these children, right? It would be different. But that's not the case. The assumption is here nobody said anything otherwise, and they're assumed to be the parents, they get skila and srefa. Amar b'shum ben Pazi, Amar b'shum ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapara. Ma'ase b'isha, here we go, we have a real case. Shabbat l'Yerushalayim v'tinok morkav la'al k'tefa. Okay, she comes to Jerusalem with this baby on her shoulders. V'igdilato, okay, she brought him up. Uba aleha, okay, when he got older, she slept with him, or he slept with her. V'hevi'um l'beitim v'saklum. Lo mipnei shebena v'adai, ela mipnei shekaruch achareha. Okay? Not because they knew for sure that this was her son, but because he was with her and, you know, he was on her shoulders when she came, and we assumed that she's the mother.
Him.
Right. And she raised him. So, anyway, it's a very interesting halakha that we take it agadei kach, that we can kill people based on this. Ve'ein srofin truma al ha-chazakot. We don't burn truma when it comes to chazaka. How do we know this? To Amar Rishon ben Lakish, Sorfim ala chazakot, Rabbi Yochanan omer, ein sorfim. Okay, so first of all, now we're hearing that there's a machloke, because remember, we were on Rabbi Yochanan. The Rabbi Yochanan said, malkin, so klim v'sorfim, but ein sorfim, truma. Right, sorfim people, but not truma. And Rabbi Rish Lakish disagrees and says, we are. Va'azdu l'tamayu, and they both go l'shitatam. Ditznan, here's a Mishnah. Tinok shenimtza b'tzad ha'isa u'batzek biyado. Okay, this, right, we can all imagine this as parents. The child sitting next to a piece of, a batch of dough, and he has a piece of dough in his hands. Okay? Rabbi Meir mitaher v'chachamim mitam'im. Rabbi Meir assumes the dough is tahor, the rest of the dough, not what's in his hands, but the rest of the dough is tahor. And chachamim assumed it's tameh. Why? Mipnei shedarko l'tapeach. Okay, so first thing is, we're going to see a machlok at Rashi, and forget who says otherwise, about what the issue here is about the dough. What are we concerned about? So Rashi says, okay, what's our concern with the dough? The concern is, right, let me just make sure this is Rashi before I say it in his name. Biyadua shenatal min ha'isa. Okay, right. Rashi says, biyadua shenatal min ha'isa. It's clear that he took from the isa. Okay, right. It's clear. He has a piece of dough in his hand. So obviously, he took it out, right? We know this about kids, right? They take it from the isa. But what's the chashash? Litapeach, Rashi says, what does it mean that rov tinokot mitapchim? Okay, darkoshal tinok litapeach. It means, bishratzimu nivelot shebashpa. Kids touch everything. So if they touch things, what was the assumption? That they touched a nevela in the garbage, they touched a sheretz in the garbage, okay? They touch all sorts of things, and therefore the presumptive status is that a child is tameh, okay? Other people say no. The question is the presumptive status, I think it's Tosfot who says this, right? Yeah. Tosfot says, where is it? Okay, Lachem Peresh Rabbeinu Tam. Again, Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. Okay, it's about halfway through the Shedar Koshel Tino L'Tapeach, a little bit before the halfway point. Shatino Vaday Tameim. Kedifarash B'Tosefta. Ul Tino Koder Vaday Tameim. That's not the suffix. What's the suffix? V'lachei Naka Shenimtza B'Tzad Ha'Isau B'Tzeik B'Yado. Now you see that scene, right? There's two options here. Dehashja Safeik Hu Im Natla Min Ha'Isa V'Timeit Ha'Isa. O Shema Adam Tahor Nechnas L'Sham V'Natal Ha'Isa V'Natal L'Tino. We don't know, did he touch the dough itself and take the piece of dough in his hand from the batch? Or did he take it directly and therefore touch the batch and mess up the whole thing? Or did someone else come, a Tanish Tahor, and give him a piece of the dough? Now, nowadays, people try not to eat raw dough. You know, maybe you can assume that he didn't take from the dough. Unless it's like pita dough where there's no egg in it. But anyway, right, like why would someone give him a piece of dough? It seems a little strange, right? People don't generally eat dough. But anyway, there's two approaches about what exactly the suffix is.
My kids ask for a bit of challah dough every week when it's
oh, okay, that's true. My kids also like to eat challah dough. It's definitely true.
Eat the dough.
It's true.
Cookie dough too, but challah dough, pizza dough they wanted when I made pizza
right.
This week.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my kids also do. Okay, so there you have it. Eating raw dough from the Gemara. or from Rabbeinu.
It's a tradition that goes back a long time.
At least to the 1200s in France. So, the Havinamba. So now they ask a question. Now remember, we're trying to figure out why Rabbi Yochanan says Ein Sorfin and Rish Lakish says Sorfin. And now we started with a Machloket Tanaim. Rabbi Meir says this Tinok is Mitaher and Chamim or Mitamim. Okay? And then they say, my time is Rabbi Meir. Kasavar Rov Tinokot Mitapchim Umiyut Emitapchim. Now why does Rabbi Meir say it's Tahor? Because on the one hand he says most Tinokot do are Mitapchim, however you see this, right? Would grab from the dough, right? This happens in my house where you know, the younger kids clearly take the dough, don't touch it, you know, and they grab it. And Miut Emitapchim, and there's a few calm babies who sit there, you know, and don't touch anything. The Isa, now remember, we're trying to explain why Rabbi Meir is mitaher. The isa bechezkat tahara omedet. Okay? The isa, before anyone touched it, has a chazaka of tahara. So therefore, samach mi'uta lechazaka, if you put together the mi'ut of tinokot who don't touch, together with the chazaka, which is very strong, itrale ruba, the rov becomes weakened. Okay, you follow? This is like all these issues we've been seeing about chazaka. And so yesterday we saw chazaka of now versus chazaka that was. Now we have rov versus chazaka. So if you have rov versus chazaka, the mi'ut connects with the rov, makes it stronger, weakens the rov, and therefore we can say it's tahor. Rabbanan, mi'uta kemanda leitadami. The mi'ut here, as if it is almost non-existent, Ruba bechazaka, ruba adif. If you put rov and chazaka together, which weighs heavier? Rov weighs heavier than chazaka. Okay, so that's what chachamim say. So Amarish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yoshaya, Zohi shesorfin ala et hatruma. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ein zo chazaka shesorfin ala et hatruma. Okay, so now what do we have here? Now we're going to finally get to their opinion. About that Mishnah, Rish Lakish says, this case where we talk about Chachamim said it's Tamei, this is the case where based on Chachamim saying Rov and Chazaka, Rov is Adif, we're going to go by Rov Tinokot Mitapchim, and this is the case where we say we burn the Truma. And Rabbi Yochanan says, while it's true they say it's Tamei, however, this is not a case where we say we burn the Truma. So this supports what we saw before, right? This is where Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish were arguing about what we saw earlier, that Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein sorfin truma ala chazakot. But if you notice the wording of Rabbi Yochanan, what does he say? This is not a case of chazaka where you were burned the truma. What does that presume? There is another possible case of chazaka where you were burned the truma. So, what's that? Elo ezo chazaka la Rabbi Yochanan shesorfin ala et truma. Where would you find a case Rabbi Yochanan would think the chazaka is strong enough to burn the truma? Kiditznan, isa b'toch habayit, ushratzim utzvardeim mitaplim sham. Okay, this is a very pleasant case. You have an isa in your house, a piece of dough, and there's pieces of either a sheretz or a frog mixed up in your dough. Okay. Oh, sorry, we didn't get to that yet. Okay, we'll see that in a second. There's frogs and other creepy crawlers in your house. Now, the main thing to know here is a sheretz is one of the Shemona Shratzim, according to the Torah, where there's a few different opinions about it. If you remember, we learned about this, about who exactly these Shratzim are. But they're all metame. They're carcasses. And the Tzvardeim are not. Okay? They're tahorim. So a Tzvardea would be tahor. It's not considered a sheretz. So if you have a house full of Shratzim and Tzvardeim, very pleasant, v'nimtzu'u chatichot ba'isa, and then you find little pieces of some creature in your isa. So, im rov shratzim tme'a, if, now you have to count, you know, how, do you have more frogs or more shratzim? I know you think this is very pleasant. So, if more shratzim, then it's tme'a. V'im rov tzvardeim tohora, if you have more tzvardeim in your house, then it's tohora. So in this case, okay, Rabbi Yochanan would say, this is a case where we can burn the truma. Okay, we can say it's more vadai tame that we're going to allow you to burn the truma. Okay, so now, because you have to remember, to burn truma, if the truma is good, is a problem. So in the other case, we're going to treat it as tame, but we're not going to burn it. This case, you can already burn it. So now you have to say, what are the two? What are the distinctions between the two cases, right? Why in one, with the Tino case, are we not going to burn? And why in this case, we are going to burn? So I'll bring you two different reasons. Okay. So Rashi says that there's a distinction between a ruba de'ita kaman, if you look in Imrov Shratzim, okay, six lines from the bottom. Okay, why? It's something that we can quantify. It's in front of us. We can count. And maybe you can't exactly count, but you can figure out, are there more or are there less? It's in front of you. But a rove of tinokot that touch things, right? Again, let's say you take Rashi. This is Rashi anyway. Rashi said, either which way, right? D'mor tinokot, whether you look at Rabbeinu Tam's interpretation or his, d'mor tinokot touch shratzim and less don't, you know, that's something you can't count, you can't quantify. It's a ruba d'leita kaman. It's not in front of us to start counting, okay, how many tinokot touched and how many tinokot didn't touch. That's not something you can quantify. So that's Rashi. So when it comes to the case where you can quantify, you can sort of count how many in your house, it's fine. The Ramban says something different. He says that in the second case, with the doe, it definitely came in contact with a dead animal. And that already weakens the presumptive status of this doe. The status was b'chazkat tohorah, but as soon as some dead animal touched it, even if it's tzvardeah, isn't metame, it already weakens the chazaka that's on it. Okay, again, depending on which interpretation you go by, but if you go by Rabbeinu Tam, which obviously he went by, that interpretation, in that case, we don't know for sure that there was touched by anyone. Right? May have been touched by the Tino, but may have not been. So therefore, he distinguishes in that way, which obviously Rashi didn't make this distinction, because Rashi thought the dough was definitely touched in the first case also. Okay, Tanya Kavatei to Rabbi Yochanan. Here we have a braita that supports Rabbi Yochanan, and we're going to learn a new klal here. Shnei dvarim ein behen da'at lishael, vasa'um chachamim kemo sheyesh behen da'at lishael. Tinok va'od acheret. There's two cases where we don't have an ability to question the person. Okay, now there's an assumption that if you have the ability, okay, that, look at Rashi, v'kai malan, the last Rashi on the page, kemi sheyesh lo da'at lishael. First of all, I'll explain what the difference is. Yesh lo da'at lishael means we can ask the person. We have a potential to ask the person. Let's say the person's not here, but at least in theory, we can ask the person, if the person were here, did you touch this? Did you not touch it? When it comes to a tinok, we can't ask the baby because we're not going to get a straight answer, right? The baby might say yes, and yes could be no, and we don't really have any way of knowing. So that's considered embo da'at lishael versus a case where you would have da'at lishael. So v'kai malan, anida, it says, b'rishit echid sveiko tamei. If yesh bo da'at lishael, then we're going to assume that the suffix is tameh. The devar she'ein bo da'at lishael, kaimalan da'afilu b'rishud yachid sveiko tahor. Remember we've talked about the rishud yachid, the suffix is always tameh. But it's only tameh in a case where we have da'at lishael, even though we can't, right? In other words, in theory, if we could have asked someone. but the person's not here to ask. But in a case where you couldn't even potentially ask the person, like the tinok, that's considered ein da'at lishael, and we would assume the safek is tahor. But now what the Braita is saying here, which would support Rabbi Yochanan, is there's two cases where even though ein bo da'at lishael, like the tinok case, we're going to treat it as if yesh bo da'at lishael, and we're going to be metameh it. You follow? If we treat the baby as a classic case of ein bo da'at lishael, then we would say that it's not tameh, it's a safek, and it's tahor. But we're going to basically say, in this case, the Chachamim made it as if yesh ben da'at lishael. So which cases are these two cases? Tinok ve'od acheret, and another one. So, tinok hadamaran, that's the case we already said. Now, obviously, we're going to have to say, what's this ve'od acheret? Ve'od acheret mahi, isa b'toch habayit. We have a batch of dough, another case, in the house. V'tarnagolim u'mashkim t'meim sham. And there's around your house, there's tarnagolim, and there's tamei drinks. V'nimtzu nikulim nikulim ba'isa. And you find these pecks in your dough. Okay. By the way, this is a very common, you think, oh, this is, why do we have so many cases about isa? But it's so common, right? People make their dough, they leave it to rise, they're not watching it all the time. And there's all sorts of things floating around in their houses. So, what's the issue here? If the tarnagol drank the mashketame and it was in its mouth and it pecked on the dough and some of the liquid came out on the dough, it's going to be metame the dough. So tolin, what do we do in this case? We're tole lo ochlin velo surfin. It's like the first case we saw Rabbi Yochanan where we don't burn it, but we assume it's tame and we can't eat it. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Loshanu ela b'mashkim. Okay, and then basically that would be this exact case. We can't ask the tarnagol, ein bo da'at lishael, right? You can't ask him, did you drink the mashket tameh before you pecked it? We have no way of knowing. So in theory, you would say svekot tahor, but in this case, they were machmir, just like with the baby case. But not ad kedei kach to say we burn it, right? They were machmir, this in between. And maybe that's why they did it in between, because both these cases in theory should be tahor, because it's but not al kedei kach to actually burn. So Amar Bisho ben Levi, he now narrows the focus of this halacha. Lo shanu ela b'mashkim levanim, aval b'mashkim adumim. Right. What, remember, what were their drinks? It was water, or it was
wine.
So if it was a mashke adom, im ita denakir medayada. Right. We would see red in the dough. It would be obvious. Some of the liquid got out. So then they say, no. How do you say that, Rabbi Yeshua? Ben Levi, v'dilma v'la tinu isa. Red could easily be absorbed into the dough and you wouldn't see it either. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, davar ze shama beribi upirusho lo shama. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi obviously heard this halacha but didn't hear it correctly. In other words, what he's saying is somewhat right, but he got it a little bit wrong. What he really should be meant to say was lo shanu ela b'mashkim tzlulim. This would only apply for clear liquids, in other words, see-through liquids. That I forgot what this phrase is. That if you would look into the, it's like a mirror. If a child would look into it, you'd see its reflection. Okay. But if it was a murky liquid, then it wouldn't be true because a murky liquid you would notice, okay, as opposed to something that was clear that would just blend in. Okay, new Mishnah. Lo tityached adam im shtei nashim, aval isha achat mityachedit im shnei anashim. Okay, now we get to Hilchot Yichud. Okay, one man cannot be alone in a place with two women, secluded place with two women. But one woman is allowed to be in a secluded place with two men. We're going to see why in the Gemara. It's going to be one of those Gemaras you're not going to be happy with. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af ish achad mityachedim shtei nashim. Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says one man can be alone with two women. Okay, thankfully for Rabbi Shimon. Okay, we'll see why, because this is obviously going to have a negative statement about women when they say why Tana Kama holds what he does. But what does he say? Ishcha mityachedim shtei nashim only in particular case. Bizman sheishto imo v'yashen imahem b'pundaki. Mipnei sheishto mishamarto. Oh, it's not like he's saying it's okay b'chlal, but what he's saying is if the wife is with them and is sleeping in the area, then it's fine because the assumption is his wife is making sure nothing's going to go on. Mityached adam im imo v'im bito v'yashen imahem b'kiruv basar. Okay, this is an interesting halacha. A man can be alone with his mother or his daughter and can even sleep with them, okay, without, b'kiruv basar means even if they're not clothed, okay? But if im higdilu, but once they're older, in other words, this is obviously only when they're young, okay? It doesn't say what age here. That's how you know that they're talking about without clothing. Because now they're saying once they get older, then they need to be clothed. They can sleep in the same bed, but they need to be clothed. Okay, so now there's a presumption of the end of this Mishnah, which is that when you're talking about, and then we're going to see, but it seems like only Isturei Erva of this level. In other words, right, it's specifically parent-child as opposed to other Arayot. Okay, that... there's not an assumption that you'll come to do anything if you're alone in a space, right? There's no real concern about that. Okay. First, okay, back to the first line. Lo yitached adam im shtei nashim, take a deep breath. My taima, tana debe Eliyahu, ho'il v'nashim da'atan kalot alehen. Okay, because women are da'atan kalot. Okay, what exactly does this mean that they're da'atan kalot? Okay, Rashi says, b'shtehen nochot lihit patot. They very easily get seduced, so therefore, one man together with two women, they'll easily be seduced to this man, and something can easily happen. Okay, number one, unpleasant, you know, hard to accept statement about women, that they're so easily seduced that, you know, they're alone with a man and that's the end of it. Okay, there's other interpretations that don't go by that, and that they say, da'atan kalot, is that they'll each be willing to cover up for the other. In other words, they'll see one sleep with a man and they just won't say anything about it, whereas men wouldn't do that. Whereas like a man would more publicize what the man did. Okay, this obviously goes against the place where we saw the women gossiping and that they always gossip about women sleeping around and things like that. And that the men, you know, the issue would be if they get angry at someone, they get angry and start talking about yichus. So again, all these things often come to explain things, but it's not necessarily, right? You have to remember, this is someone coming to give a reason for this halacha, knowing the halacha exists, right? What the real reason and motivation was, we don't really know. Okay, so different interpretations about what that means. Menane mile, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yishmael, Remez liyichu min haTorah. Where do we learn this? We learn it from the Torah, okay? There's a remez in the Torah for yichud. Shenemar. Ki sitcha achicha benimecha. Okay, what's this? This has nothing to do with anything, right? Of our topic. This is a mesit. That's someone who turns someone to worship Avodah Zarah, right? He says, come on, let's go worship Avodah Zarah, and he pulls him away to go do that. And the mesit gets his own punishment. Besides the person who worships it, right, he also gets a punishment. What does it say here? Who's the mesit in the case of the Torah? Achicha, your brother, ben imecha, the son of your mother. Okay, in other words, your brothers through your mother. B'chi ben em mesit, ben av eino mesit. Why did it say specifically ben imecha? It could have been ben avicha. What, like it's more likely that the ben em is going to be a mesit and not the ben av? Ela lamar lecha, ben mityached imimo. What does this teach you? Here, one second. Ben mityached imimo v'asur liityached im kol arayot shebetorah. Okay, it teaches you the halacha of yichud, that a son can be mityached with his mother, but it's forbidden for him to be mityached from any other arayot in the Torah. And that's where we see the halacha of yichud. Okay? Right, it's a very weak connection. Actually, it's so weak, I can't even remember what I saw about how this actually is connected. In other words, where do they even...
Also, why do they use the word remez? I don't know where else when they...
Well, it's certainly not explicit.
No, except so that just weakens it even more.
Right. So remez, right. First of all, remez min haTorah is a way of trying to say we want to strengthen this and say that somehow we can find something in the Torah that alludes to this, even though it's obviously not to Oraita. Right. So here's the way it goes. It's that if the son... Right. There's an assumption that sons don't really hang out in their mother's home if it was... Let's put it this way. If it was, how is a mesit ben imecha gonna, how is he gonna succeed in being mesit someone who's the son of his mother? Because what's the assumption? If you can't be mityached with your mother, then you're not gonna go visit your mother's house very often, because you'll end up in situations of yichud. So you're not gonna go by your mother's house very often. So the fact that the mesit came to the brother from his mother's side, it means that the brothers hang out in the mother's house. If the brothers hang out in the mother's house, it must be that there's no Isur Yichud. But that teaching, then you have to make the jump to, oh, well, there's no Isur Yichud from the mother, but there is Isur Yichud with other people. That's the jump.
It contradicts what we learned in Sota.
Yeah.
Remember in Sota we learned that a woman is not allowed to be mechichayit with her son, and if she gets warned, and even if it's her son, and she gets warned, she puts the halacha of Sota applied to her.
The halacha of Sota applied to her. I don't remember that. That the halacha of Sota apply, right, it was so shocking, I don't remember it, that the halachas of Sota apply, but that would only be in a case where the, right, that would be in a case, right now I'm remembering something about it, but it would be in a case where the husband suspected her. In other words, it's only if there's a suspicion. If there's no suspicion, then we don't go looking for suspicion. That's the difference. If the husband is suspicious that something's going on, then we worry about it. But if there's no worry of suspicion, then it's allowed. It's not something that we generally think is going to happen. So therefore, we allow it. However, when there's suspicions, then it's a different story. Okay? So now, we're going to see some other assumptions also that we're going to question a little bit. Okay. Pashtei dekra b'maktiv. So now they want to know, what's the pshat of this pasuk? Amar bai, lo mibai kamar. Okay, this is one of those lo mibaya structures. Lo mibaya ben av disage levi iyats le etzo raot. In other words, it's not what it's saying is it doesn't mention the son from the father, because the son from the father you don't even need to say why, because the son of a father, generally we can assume that brothers who share the same father have a rivalry between them. Why is that? Because they're fighting over the nachala. So we could see that the brother from a father would be iyayitz le'etzo ra'ot. We kind of want to mess up the other brother, right? What happens if he gets the other brother worship of Avodah Zarah and the brother gets killed? You know, he'll get more nachala. El afilu ben aim delo sagele. But even the son of a mother, where there's less of this issue, aimatzaitele. Okay? You might think that he would... That he could, right, so what does this mean? That he would, you might think that he would listen to him, that, and therefore kamashmalan, right? So what would we assume here? That he would, right. The Torah is, it's more like this. The Torah is telling you, if you're, the son of your mother tells you this, don't think you can listen to him and that he doesn't have your bad, right? Like he's trying to mess you up. Still don't listen to him. I mean, it's obvious anyway. If someone tries to tell you to worship Avodah Zarah, you should listen to him. So this is all like an underlying thing going on here. Okay? Kamashalan, you still shouldn't listen to him. Okay. Nema matnitin. Oh, before we get to this, there was something that comes out of this I wanted to discuss. Just let me try to remember exactly where it comes from. It's already, wow. Okay, I didn't realize the time. Okay, the one thing I wanted to just point out is that there's an assumption about the, I'm trying to remember where it comes from. You know, we'll start with it tomorrow. Fine, we'll stop here for today. We'll pick up from here tomorrow. Okay.